Hello and welcome to installment number 16 of the Under the Dome podcast. We're here.
I thought this was two.
This is the second Under the Dome.
There you go.
Of the podcast series.
It's also the fourth name of the podcast.
So anyway, welcome, Irish fans.
Fourth.
What was that?
At first we were just Campus Press Box, whatever. Then we were Irish Insiders, whatever. And then we were the Irish Coffee Podcast, and now we're Under the Dome.
All right, I wasn't counting Campus Press Box.
Well, I was, so...
Because that wasn't our own thing.
It basically was.
I suppose you're kind of right, but...
Well, I'm not usually wrong.
Well, okay. But anyway, we're coming at you, Irish fans, after the season mercifully ended.
Oh, thank God.
This past Saturday. If you would have told me, 3 months ago, that your college football season, as far as fandom, would be over by November 27th, I would have told you, I'd have been really mad. But here I am on November 27th, and I'm really happy that it's over because that was a long
time. I mean, I'm not happy it's over. Like, I'm happy that they're done sucking this year.
Well,
but I'm not happy the way the season went.
Oh, I'm not happy the way the season went, but I'm just happy that it's
that we don't have to waste more Saturdays.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. So, I don't know. Even though I was talking to some family members at Thanksgiving about this, and I was like, you know what? Like, I went to 3 Notre Dame games this year. They lost 2 of the 3 that I went to. I saw 1 of the 4 wins, so that's pretty good. it always is fun going to South Bend, and that's just one thing that I don't know. I think people who aren't Notre Dame fans don't get. Like, Ohio State fans really only go to Ohio State games for the football. But like, you go to Notre Dame and obviously there's a football game that's like the culmination of things, but you go and you walk around, you see the dome and you go to the grotto and things like that. And that's kind of, I don't know, that's all that stuff still makes it fun for me anytime I go. So, people started asking me like, are you still gonna go to Notre Dame games now that they are terrible? Like, are they gonna be terrible next year? I was like, well, I don't think so, but I don't know.
They're not going to be terrible next year. People will still go to all of the Notre Dame games. The sky is not falling. They had a bad year. It shouldn't happen, but it did.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But my actual answer was they could go 3-9 next year, and I'd still probably go to 3 or 4 games. So I don't know. I think that's kind of the beauty of Notre Dame football. Like, the fans that care the most are still going to go. And there's never going to be a case. Like, I see people all the time, like, talking about, like, boycotting Notre Dame football until, like, Brian Kelly's fired. And it's like, that's absolutely the most ridiculous thing I've ever
heard. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Now, I will say that in the student section against Virginia Tech, and this is worth noting because we haven't talked to our listeners since then, but the student section was quite a bit not full for that game.
Cold and rainy, and
but usually senior day they come out and they show up and they at least stay until halftime
to throw marshmallows
and things. Yes, so I don't know. So obviously we didn't do a podcast last week because
our schedules didn't line up. And
right.
We apologize for not giving you guys content last week. I know that you all sorely missed it. So my sincerest apologies.
Yeah. So I'm not going to apologize for it too much, but hey, anyway, I'm usually the warm and fuzzy guy doing the apologies. And you're the one that just says, you know,
things as they are.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of interesting. But so since we talked last, Notre Dame had some sanctions handed down. They've lost 2 football games, the final 2 of the year. Obviously,
but the basketball team's unbeaten, man. Can you see a third straight Elite Eight or what?
And the women's team is unbeaten also.
And number 1 in the country.
And they can, and both teams can play with leads.
And both teams can probably beat Navy.
Both teams also can probably beat Duke.
Yeah, you're right about that. Around the time Notre Dame lost to Duke, someone goes, isn't it embarrassing that they lost to Duke in football? I go, yeah, but they beat them in basketball all the time, so it makes it a little bit better. Mike Frey kind of owns Coach K, so it makes it a little more bearable.
We should probably knock on wood before we, I don't know, start talking too much. Mac, there you go. I heard you get it, so that's good.
Well, Coach K has like 5 or 6 losses all time to former assistants of his.
And they're all to Mike Bray. Yeah.
He's like 21 and 6. And Mike Bray's like 6-2 against him.
That's really funny,
actually. It's outstanding. And my favorite one was when in the ACC tournament when Duke was up by like 30. It might not have been 30, but it would a 15 to 20 point lead.
Yes.
And Notre Dame came back and they went on like a 28-4 run and won the game.
Yeah, that really was something. But let's talk about these academic sanctions for a little bit. What are your thoughts?
I think the NCAA really handed down way too harsh of a penalty. I get the probation. You know, that $5,000 fine's really, really, really going to be backbreaking to Notre Dame as an institution. I don't know if they can ever recover from that. But the vacation of wins in the 2012 and 2013 seasons is completely, absolutely, completely unnecessary and unwarranted, in my opinion, for a couple reasons. One, Notre Dame self-reported all of this, did their own investigation, pulled kids off the field, kicked the star quarterback out of school. Like, their star quarterback that took them to the national championship game got kicked out of school. That doesn't happen anywhere. They pulled off guys that were starters. 5-star recruits were pulled off the field for this stuff. I think that's enough of a punishment as is. I don't think they needed to vacate wins. If you're going to vacate those 2 years of wins from Notre Dame, you need to go back and vacate like 17 years worth of North Carolina football wins. In all honesty.
Yeah.
It's a very similar situation.
It really is.
And Notre Dame was way more progressive about their findings and looking to find stuff than North Carolina has been. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, I don't understand what the NCAA is doing here. I don't know if they're trying to make an example out of Notre Dame, because Notre Dame's like an academic institution. Like, that's number one. You can't necessarily say that about some other schools, I would say. But I don't know if that has anything to do with it. And if it does, it still doesn't make sense to me, because I don't know. Basically, what the NCAA has said here is don't self-report your violations. Because if Notre Dame hadn't self-reported this, pretty good chance that nothing ever became of it. Like, what's the NCAA going to do, run an audit? How are they going to find out that a person – a student trainer is writing papers for football players? I don't know. So in an effort, I think, for the NCAA to make an example out of Notre Dame, they just basically said, well, if this is happening, don't self-report it, because we're going to take away your wins for it. And the thing is, like, it's a particular slap in the face to a place like Notre Dame that prides itself on tradition and, you know, being one of the 3 most winningest programs in the country, whether you go by win percentage, whether you go by total wins, whatever, they're up there in both of those categories. And then you do this to them, so they're vacating 21 wins. And it just is so stupid. And yeah. I don't understand it at all.
Yeah, and on Outside the Lines on ESPN, ESPN's Paul Feinbaum said, Notre Dame simply sold their soul to try and win more football games. And Doug Gottlieb of CBS Sports Radio really had a tweet to react to that I really agreed with. He said, this is 100% false by Paul Feinbaum. Notre Dame self-reported, they took 5 guys off the field, and they made their star quarterback, they kicked their star quarterback out of school.
Yeah,
that's not selling your soul to win football games. If something wrong happens, you took care of it yourself. They cost themselves games. You can't tell me that if Everett Golson's on the field in 2013, they're not better than they were without him. You can't tell me that Kavari Russell wouldn't have been better, or Ishaq Williams on the field wouldn't have made a difference.
Tavares Daniels.
CFL Rookie of the Year.
Shout out to him.
He was named the Canadian Football League Rookie of the Year earlier this week. So I wasn't joking about that. That's a real thing. But you can't tell me Notre Dame wouldn't have been better with these guys on the field. Selling their soul to win football games would have been finding this stuff out and trying to hide it.
Completely agree. And I don't know. I've got to toot my own horn on a joke that I made to you earlier today in reference to a player, Janoris Jenkins from the Giants.
Oh, yeah. I was going to bring that up.
Tweeted it to Roe Pryor. It's not a very nice tweet, so I'm not going to talk about the content of it. Basically just told Terrell Pryor that he didn't think very highly of him. Let's just put it that way. And Terrell Pryor just responded back with the most polite response ever, which was kind of surprising and really, I don't know, talks about how Terrell Pryor's really grown up in over the years. But the point is, what I said to you about it is based on the wording of the tweet and the spelling and the language used that Janoris Jenkins put in that tweet, probably there's a trainer that was writing his papers at University of Florida for him. So I'm going to say that Notre Dame's not the only place.
Can we keep talking about Janoris Jenkins here for a second?
Yes, continue.
So Janoris Jenkins played at Florida under Coach Urban Meyer, correct? Oh,
I believe so.
After Urban Meyer left due to Tim Tebowitis or lack of Tim Tebowitis or whatever gave him chest pains, is going to have when JT Barrett leaves Ohio State, his chest is going to hurt again. But Janoris Jenkins was kicked off the team because he was arrested twice for possession of marijuana during the offseason. He was quoted as saying, "No doubt, if Coach Meyer were still coaching, I'd still be playing for the Gators. Coach Meyer knows what it takes to win." End quote.
I didn't realize that was Janoris Jenkins.
Yes.
To be honest with you. Great. So are we eliminating Urban Meyer from future Notre Dame football discussion?
I said yesterday that, well, I thought Michigan was going to win yesterday. And yes. I said, man, Herb's going to be in the hospital with chest pains and then on Notre Dame sidelines in 2 years now.
You know, one thing that I haven't necessarily been the most comfortable to say this over a microphone, except I'm going to say it now, is that part of the reason I wonder that they're continuing to go with Brian Kelly is because they don't want to hire a guy and then in 2 years go after Urban Meyer. Like, they can keep Brian Kelly around to the end of his contract, and then in like 2020 or whatever, Urban Meyer might actually want to leave Ohio State.
Maybe.
I almost wonder, like, and I guess we can transition to this Brian Kelly thing because we were going to anyways, and this is a decent segue. But I almost wonder if the fact that it seems like Jack Swarbrick is, you know, if I had to put money on it, I'd say Brian Kelly's back next year, although it's far more shaky than it was the last time that we talked. But I kind of think one of the reasons for that is that Swarbrick looks at the coaching pool, knew he wasn't going to get Tom Herman. I could have told you. I mean, I did say that I think Tom Herman's going to go to Texas like in like week two.
Dude, I said that on one of our Campus Press Box podcasts over a year ago. Like, I want to find that sound because I said Tom Herman will be the Texas head coach in 2017.
Yeah, that's fair. You did say that.
I know for a fact I said that into a microphone.
Yes, you're right. But, like, what I was saying, it was in reference to – it was right after Les Miles got fired and everyone was like, well, Tom Herman could go to LSU. And I said, no, he's going to Texas. He has ties to the state of Texas. He was a graduate assistant under Mack Brown. He – coached at Texas State and all of these small Texas schools. He's going back to the state of Texas. He's in Texas now. He's staying in the state of Texas, I guess is what I should say.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So that wasn't going to happen. Les Miles is not a good fit, in my opinion, unless he runs a completely different defense, unless you like he tells you in the interview, hey, this is who I'm having as my offensive coordinator. He's not a good fit. And outside of that, then you just have a lot of...
Who would you need to have for his offensive coordinator? And I swear to God, if you say Art Briles, I'm jumping out of this conversation.
Not Art Briles, because even since I joked about that, there's been more that's come out about Art Briles and what
he did. Well, I told you it would never happen.
I mean, I didn't say it was ever going to happen. It was a joke. Moving on, though. So I don't know. Lane Kiffin?
No. Lane Kiffin's going to LSU.
Somebody of that caliber, and I don't think there really is anyone. So that's kind of the point that I'm making. So, like I say, Les Miles, not really a fit in my opinion. He could keep Mike Sanford, but
I would love Mike Sanford as the OC.
Yes, but anyway, so like I say, I don't.
Do you think they're trying to hold on to BK till Mike's ready?
I don't. Maybe. I that's a good question. I do think that there is a reason that they're sticking with Brian Kelly, and it's with a bigger picture in mind. Because if they didn't have a bigger picture in mind, he'd be gone. The shelf life of an NCAA football coach these days, like, you don't see guys stay in the same job for a whole lot longer than Brian Kelly's been at Notre Dame, to be honest.
And Brian Kelly has really lasted a long time at Notre Dame. And honestly, I know it's easy to rip on him now, and it's kind of low-hanging fruit because they just went 4-8. But he's been pretty successful.
Yeah, a lot of Notre Dame fans are real quick to jump on the fact that, you know, there's a particular follower that drives me nuts someone that I follow that is just talking about how Notre Dame is settling for mediocrity and the fact that it's 9-4 and it's not good enough and all of that stuff. Well, Brian Kelly, when you look at his whole resume outside of Notre Dame, first of all, he went to the national championship. He has what he's done at Notre Dame. He took
the first ever winless team to the BCS title. No one has ever taken a winless team to a BCS title game before, man.
So he inherited a dumpster fire at Notre Dame. He had them in a BCS title game 3 years after he was here. And even outside of the 7 years at Notre Dame, he's had success at every single level that he's coached at, whether that's Cincinnati, Grand Valley State, wherever the heck he was before that. Central Michigan. I forgot about Central Michigan, but in between those two. But so he knows what he's doing. The guy can coach football, and you see it in his team a little bit when they're able to jump on teams like Virginia Tech, and they're able to jump on teams like Miami. Now, obviously, there was something missing from this Notre Dame football team that maybe Brian Kelly in the past in his other places wasn't the one that provided that killer instinct, but when Notre Dame finds something like that, whether that's bringing in another personality as an assistant, whether that's better leadership of, you know, players on the team, I think this Notre Dame team is going to be fine. I don't know. So there's only so many elite football coaches out there, and it's really hard to get those. And usually the teams that get those are the teams that have, like, developed that person up, like, through their program. Like, Urban Meyer basically handpicked Tom Herman, developed him into the coach that he is, and now Tom Herman's having all that success. So I don't know. Like, it's hard to get an elite person like an Urban Meyer, like a Nick Saban. Tom Herman doesn't have a long enough resume for me to call him an elite head coach yet.
He's not. He lost three games this year, which his team was favored by double digits.
And if that had happened at Notre Dame, they'd want to run him out of town because that's exactly what happens to Brian Kelly. So
he's not the genius everyone makes him out to be.
Yeah. So I guess the point that I'm trying to make, and I've talked around it a little bit and stumbled over myself, but, like, there's only so much that the coach can do. There's only so much that the coach can fix. And when you've got a pretty decent guy like Brian Kelly, I think he should stick around.
I agree. I'm against firing him now because this team was so young. And I think if they beat Texas, they probably win three or four more games. If they find a way to beat Texas, they beat Duke. I don't want to say they beat NC State because that was just the the weather was so – I think you have to throw that one out. Like, I watched that entire game, and I couldn't tell you anything about how I feel about NC State because of how that game played out. But you probably beat Virginia Tech. You probably beat Michigan State.
And I know – okay, so I wholeheartedly agree with you. I know that we're going to have listeners that disagree with
that. And
that's
fine. At me, bro.
Yeah, for real. But anyway, like, I do think that people underestimate, I guess, the power of momentum, I suppose.
Well, yeah. It's a in football, it's a real thing. In baseball, it's not. I mean, in baseball, momentum is just the next day's starting pitcher. But in football, momentum happens. It's real.
Yes. So I think that there is a, I don't know, a whole different mentality if they beat Texas week one. Now, if they beat, like you said, if they beat Texas week one, are they in contention for a college football playoff spot? Probably not.
No, but they're going to a solid bowl game.
But they're probably playing in a bowl. I mean,
no, they are playing in a bowl game.
Yeah, you're right.
Because they beat Navy too.
Yeah.
So if they beat Texas, I think they also beat Duke, beat Navy, beat Virginia Tech. That's four more wins. That flips them to 8-4.
And if we're sitting here at 8-4.
You're going to the Music City Bowl. Or you're going to something better than the Pinstripe Bowl, probably.
A bowl. Let's just put it that way. You're going to A bowl.
I mean, if you beat Navy and Virginia Tech, you're going to a bowl game or whatever.
And the other thing I guess that I'll say about this whole Brian Kelly situation and the landscape of college football is that sometimes I want to talk to some of our – have a sit-down with some of our followers and just people that I see on Twitter in general that says, have you watched college football this year? Like, has any team outside of Alabama, like, week in and week out just looked like themselves every single week? Like, Louisville just lost to Kentucky. They also
Lamar Jackson probably lost the he didn't lose the Heisman, but the Heisman is way up for grabs after the past couple weeks he's had.
Yep, the gap is surely closing.
Fun fact, name the last player to win the Heisman even though they lost their last two games of the regular season.
I don't know.
Tim Brown, 1987.
I was going to say, I don't know. I had a feeling it was a Notre Dame player.
Well, why else would I ask the question on a Notre Dame themed podcast?
Well, we digress quite a bit, Danny.
Well, I was trying to get us back on track because that's what I do. Just let me produce, Ben.
Right. So, all right, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess I didn't realize that.
I saw it on SportsCenter.
Yeah, I figured. But anyway, okay. So I get to back to my point. There is not like a team outside of Alabama that has dominated like week in and week out. If anything, okay, we had a week where number two, number three, and number four all lost in significant upsets. So if that doesn't tell you that the talent gap between college football programs is pretty close, then I don't know what does. And knowing that Notre Dame was so close in so many of their games, there's no reason to think that they can't bounce back and be a, at the very worst, 8-4, 9-3, 10-2 type team next year. There's no reason to not think that. And unless you have a home run, knock them out of the park coaching hire in your back pocket, why make a change when you have a guy that I don't know, that like we have talked about has proven himself.
And tell me who even that home run knock out of the park coaching hire would be. There's like one guy I'm interested in right now, and I don't think it's a home run. He's someone, if BK would resign or get fired, that I would want Notre Dame to go after, but I don't think it's a significant upgrade.
And who is he?
Matt Rhule from Temple.
Okay. I thought that's who you were going to go for. So yeah, I like him a lot too. I know one guy that a lot of Notre Dame fans are high on is PJ Fleck from Western Michigan. And my response to that is, so basically you're hiring a younger version of Brian Kelly. Is that what you're doing?
I think PJ Fleck's more likable. I think that's one of Brian Kelly's biggest problems with the fan base and the national media is that he's not a likable guy. Like PJ Fleck, I don't care either, but a lot of people do, Ben. I genuinely don't care one bit if he's likable or not. I care if he wins. Okay.
Right. Frankly, Nick Saban is the least likable guy in college football.
Well, Nick Saban's face doesn't turn purple, and I think Brian Kelly's skin tone kind of hurts him because there's just pictures of his face like as dark as a grape floating around. So I think that hurts him because when he gets mad, he turns purple.
But you're right. You're right.
But that hurts him. That hurts him because that picture is hilarious. So it hurts him. But a guy like Matt Rhule or PJ Fleck or Tom Herman or Urban Meyer or Jim Harbaugh is more likable. But that doesn't matter to me. But it does matter to a lot of people. I care about wins and losses. I don't care whether or not you're liked. You can be liked and go 1-11. I'm not going to be happy. Everyone can hate you. And if you're raising a trophy, I'm thrilled.
So Brian Kelly has really toned down, even in his 7 years at Notre Dame, has really toned down his sideline demeanor a little bit. He dismissed that quite a bit, but he's toned it down. And the other thing is, Jim Harbaugh on Saturday in the Ohio State-Michigan game threw his play sheet, broke his headset, cost his team 15 yards that gave Ohio State a goal-to-go situation where they scored, like, on the next play, I think.
Although I do have to defend Harbaugh there.
Well, it was a bad call, but has Brian Kelly ever drawn a 15-yard penalty?
I'm sure he has. Did you hear the explanation he was given for why it was called?
No, I did not. I missed that.
The referee said, well, if this was basketball, that would have been a technical foul. That was the explanation as for why he got a personal foul, which is terrible. Because, I mean, also, like, if this was basketball, a run play would be a travel. So, I mean, you can't do that. a tackle would be a flagrant too. So
you're allowed
not
to pass the ball forward on multiple times per possession in basketball. Yes.
Yeah. You are able to do that. You're not allowed to dunk in football. You get 15 yards for that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was rather comical and not well done out of that officiating group yesterday.
I forget what call Harbaugh was protesting that made him do that.
A pass interference call, I believe.
Was it the pass interference where the ball was like 15 yards above the receiver?
Yeah, it was an uncatchable pass.
I kind of think they might have called holding instead of pass interference.
That's a cop-out.
Well, I don't know. But regardless, I don't know. So I don't know. So I was going to make a point about Brian Kelly that I was going to use to wrap it up. Now I kind of can't remember. Anything else you want to talk about?
What would you wear for a Skype interview? How would you dress?
Probably I would go. But
I have a friend that has a Skype interview and he doesn't know what to wear. And he asked me.
Oh yeah. I would go button down, no tie.
No tie. That's what I told him, but I wasn't like, I didn't want to, I've never had one. So
yeah.
Now do you wear like dress pants or could he wear shorts?
He could probably wear shorts.
You think like they won't ask him to stand up?
I doubt that.
It'd be kind of funny.
They really just want to, if you're in a Skype interview, if your friend is in a Skype interview, they probably really only want to just make sure that he doesn't look scary. So fair. As long as you I don't think they're gonna be like, okay, now you're trying to deceive us, are you wearing shorts underneath that? I don't really think they care.
That's interesting. I wonder how many people do wear shorts in Skype interviews.
Never done a Skype interview. I've done a phone interview.
I've done phone interviews too. I've done tons of phone interviews.
Yeah. Let me, this is a conversation you and I have had off the air before. Let me ask you, college overtime.
Do you agree with me that
it's absurd yet?
No, I like it.
I think that, so my argument, fans, listeners, for the absurdity of college football overtime is that you take out the.
We've had this conversation field. On a podcast before.
I don't think so.
I think we've had this one. This is public knowledge before. I think we've had this conversation.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess
Ben doesn't point like that kickers don't matter.
I don't like that the field position battle doesn't matter. Michigan dominated the field position battle against Ohio State for like 75% of the game. And so then. Okay. So it wasn't like the whole, like, it's not like quarters 1 through 3, they dominated it. But regardless, yeah, 3 quarters of the game. And they. That's one of Michigan football's strengths. You completely take it out of the equation whenever you go to the, you know, here's 25 yards and this is all you have to play with. I think that really just kind of ruins the end of a college football game when you take a team's strength away from them. And I think that Michigan's strength and a lot of other teams' strength is to play the field position battle. I think, you know, if you put Alabama and Notre Dame on a field, and it's a 25-yard field, it's a pretty close game because Notre Dame can move the ball for 15, 20 yards and kick a field goal, and they probably can make enough plays, sell out on enough plays to mess up Alabama enough to keep it close. And I think that now Alabama's a way better football team than Notre Dame, but I think that really just levels the playing field to a part that I'm just not comfortable with in ending a football game. And I don't like it. And that was reaffirmed Saturday in the Ohio State-Michigan game.
Okay, but Michigan wins that game if they tackle Curtis Samuel behind the line on 3rd and 9 when they had that bubble pass blown up.
It's yes.
Letting him reverse field and picking up 7 yards.
Yes.
They win that game. If they make one tackle, they win the game. Because
yes.
Ohio State was not going to pick up 4th and 12.
You're right. All that's true. Michigan's Michigan really just shot themselves in the foot repeatedly. Ohio State did a little bit too, but Michigan did it more. And
Michigan lost the game when they fumbled the ball on the 1 yard line.
I don't know about that because Ohio State punted or fake punted it right back after
it
that.
It cost them 7 points.
Michigan had the ball like a minute and a half later and they scored a touchdown.
Yeah, but that's still a touchdown that they didn't have.
Okay, you're right, but Michigan scored a touchdown so easily on the next possession.
Okay, they could have done that and had 7 more.
Field position.
Okay, they could have kicked off, got a 3 and out, and had good field position.
Perhaps, but you don't know that.
Because Ohio State moved the ball to like the 25 or the 30-yard line before they attempted that fake punt that got stopped. It's not like Michigan picked up the ball on their own on Ohio State's 10. They got the ball at like the 25.
If you ask me, Michigan lost the football game because of 2 really bad interceptions, one that cost them.
They lost the game because of turnovers. Those 3 turnovers cost them the game.
Fair enough. We can suffice it to say turnovers. The first, I don't know, whoever called the plays.
Michigan outplayed Ohio State.
They did.
For 85% of that game.
Yes.
They were the better team for much of that game, and it sickens me they didn't win.
See, you ran that Twitter poll on our
everyone Twitter. Hates Michigan more than Ohio State, but I get that.
I can tell you why that is, because probably most of the people that follow that Twitter are from around the South Bend area.
Yeah, and we're not.
Right. I think it's really more of a proximity thing. If you live in the South Bend area, obviously Michigan is the next big program in proximity to you, so you probably hate them worse than Ohio State. You and I live an hour from Columbus. You live only a little more than that. And that probably has something to do with it. So, yeah, I don't know. Who do you think makes the college football playoff besides Alabama? I think they're pretty well locked.
Ohio State, Clemson, Washington.
I tend to agree. I hear people out there talking about multiple Big Ten teams and things like that.
Say Washington loses to the Buffs and Wisconsin wins the Big Ten, I think Michigan could sneak in at 4.
Do you see any scenario where a 2-loss conference championship winner gets in? Which would either mean
If Penn State wins, I think they're in. It's hard to keep Penn State out if they win the Big Ten, because they won the best division in college football. They beat a playoff team, and they won their conference.
That's fair.
There's no one else that can say we won the conference of. There's a playoff. There's a team in the playoff because Ohio State is in. I am 100% sold on that. Ohio State is in the playoff after that game against Michigan.
Okay.
But if Penn State wins the Big Ten, you can say, okay, this team is in the playoff. We beat them, and we won their conference. And we've won 9 games in a row.
Okay.
It's hard to keep that team out. I really believe that that's a difficult thing to do. So I think you could get 2 Big Ten teams in there. Now, if Washington loses and Wisconsin wins, I think Michigan can get in. Because Michigan will then be able to say, okay, we went to double overtime with Ohio State at their place. If that game's in Ann Arbor, it's probably a different story. We lost our other game on a last-second field goal, and we beat another Power 5 champion in Colorado.
Okay, handily.
Yeah, so I think Michigan could still sneak in. You could see a 2-loss non-conference champion get in the playoff. And another team that I think had Colorado lost to Utah yesterday, USC could be a 3-loss team getting in the playoff. If they beat Washington again in similar fashion to the way they did last time, you can't tell me right now USC's not playing some of the best football in the country behind Alabama. You can't.
Oh, yeah.
They are
the
second hottest team in the country.
Behind Alabama, you're saying?
Yes. Alabama has not lost a game. They are the hottest team in the country right now. But USC is for real. They just didn't – now, I know this isn't fair, and you do have to look at the whole body of work, but if you're going 4 best teams right now, if your ultimate goal is to put the 4 best teams in the college football playoff, I think your playoff is Alabama, Ohio State, USC, and Michigan. I think those are the 4 best teams in college football right now.
I think, I really can't disagree with a lot of what you're saying.
It'll never happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying if your goal is to have the 4 best teams at the end of the year in the playoff, those are the 4 best right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose you – yeah. See, I'm trying to – as you're saying that, I'm trying to think of scenarios in which I can make an argument for Clemson or Washington, but I really just kind of can't. Definitely not Washington because
– Clemson's most impressive win is against Louisville at home. Louisville just lost to a poor Kentucky team.
They got throttled by Houston.
After Houston had lost to Navy and SMU, and before Houston lost to – who did they lose to this week?
Did they lose this week?
Yeah, they lost to Memphis. They lost to Memphis this week.
Oh, I didn't even see that. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they lost 3 games this year. Boy genius at Houston lost 3 games, and they were favored by double digits in every game they lost.
That's unfortunate.
They had the inside track to the playoff. They won their toughest game of the year and had the inside track.
Right.
And screwed it up.
Yep. You're right. All right. Well,
so yeah, but I mean, it'll never happen, but those are the 4 best teams right now.
I'm going to just sum this up by saying that we need either 6 or an 8 team playoff.
No, I like 4.
I'd like 8, but that's a conversation we've
had. No, because if you move away from a 4 team playoff, the Ohio State-Michigan games a lot of years becomes meaningless because both teams could get in no matter what most years. Like if there's an 8-team playoff, both of those teams are in and yesterday's game doesn't matter. The winner's in and the loser's in.
Yeah, I hear that, but it's not like the teams aren't going to play hard. I mean, they're still
I
playing
get
for.
that they're still going to play hard, but yesterday was a de facto quarterfinal. I mean,
Right, yeah.
Michigan's not dead, but their chances of getting, they need a lot to happen for them to get in.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that is an interesting point. I don't know. To me, it's just there's just going to be somebody that's really ticked off,
Yeah, there's always
and
going to be.
justifiably so.
You
And
should have won more games.
that's why they made the college football playoff to tick off less teams, basically.
No.
They made the college football playoff for ratings, let's be honest.
They
But
made the college football playoffs for revenue, Ben.
ratings and revenue, same difference.
Revenue.
Revenue comes from ratings, so there it is. But I don't know. I don't know. So, man, you really just kind of blew my mind here at the end. I wasn't prepared for this conversation, but
Well, I
this
mean,
will
am I wrong or
about which part?
all of
I think eight teams would be wonderful.
it? No, like I think my top four is spot on. And you know what else that top four would bring in?
What's that?
An incredible amount of money.
Yes.
Alabama, big ratings.
Yep.
Alabama, Michigan is a semifinal. Whew.
Yep. Yeah.
USC Ohio State is a semifinal. Whew.
So here's something for
Michigan Ohio State as the college football playoff championship game. Oh my God.
my gosh, that would be awful.
It could be awful, depending on who won.
they might as well just play that at Cleveland Brown Stadium or something. But
No, that
anyway,
place is a dump. Scoreboards are shaped like Tennessee.
oh, so okay. Would this, okay, so you talked about how you don't want an 18 playoff, and the reason you don't is because of games like Ohio State and Michigan
It
being
would
somewhat.
lose a little bit of its luster.
What if, and this is something that you have dismissed that I said earlier, I think, on this podcast, but what if you made the Big Ten championship essentially the, and not even just the Big Ten, but like all the Power Five championships. If you win a Power Five championship, you're in.
No, stupid.
Wouldn't that solve your issue? Is because they'd both be playing for the Big Ten
No,
championship.
because in the ACC, you could get a team that's 6-6 that ends up winning the Coastal and somehow, some way upsets Florida State. And oh, hey, Georgia Tech went 7-6. Let's throw them in the college football playoff.
Then let them get rolled. It happens in
No, that's,
every.
you know,
It
it's that,
happens in
you know
every
what that's
sport.
not good for, Ben? Ratings,
Okay,
revenue.
that's one game out of four games that doesn't do well that
Yeah,
weekend,
and that's
and then it's
money
one game out
lost.
of. It's not money lost. You still make money on it.
Not as
You don't
much
make a
as you
lot of
would.
money on it, but there's still
I'm
money.
telling
You're not going to lose money on a college football game.
you, it's good at four. It will eventually expand, but it's good at four.
Doesn't it happen in every sports league? Like even the NBA, the 1 versus 8 matchup is like the Cleveland Cavaliers versus somebody that goes 35-45, 37-45 from the Eastern Conference and doesn't really deserve to be in the playoff. It happens.
Hey,
And
dude, but those upsets also happen. And there are ba professional basketball is apples and oranges with college football for the playoffs. You're playing
wouldn't you love it?
series.
Time out. Wouldn't you love it if like you said, Georgia Tech. Are they playing in the who's no, okay, Virginia Tech's
Virginia
playing in the
Tech is.
ACC
But
championship.
there was a year Georgia Tech finished the season 6-7. Because they lost in the ACC title game and they had to get an exemption to be bowl eligible because they were under 500.
Okay, but here's what I'm
NCAA
here's
granted them bowl eligibility even though they were under 500 because they lost their conference championship game because they made it being 500.
Okay, but
Say
wouldn't
they
that
win
be
that
a
game, they're
great
7-6.
money-making revenue story if Georgia Tech in that year gets to the college football playoff
And
that
loses by
they
90 to Alabama? No, that's not a good story.
and then beats the number one team?
They're not going to.
They beat somebody pretty good in the ACC title game to get there. They're not going to be
not like necessarily. Not necessarily.
Alabama, they didn't. Not going to be that great every single year. At some point, Alabama.
I'm not saying it's like going Nick to be Saban's Alabama. Die. It could be Notre Dame.
You're right. Yeah, but all right. So most years, there's not a one team at the peak of the mountain that's like so untouchable.
Yeah, you've got like Alabama. Three or four, and Georgia Tech's nowhere near any of them. You don't have a feasible argument here, man.
Oh gosh. All right. Well, yeah. All right. We can call this a day for right now because you and I have other things to accomplish tonight. So that we're going to record another podcast tonight. So that's going to be great. We're
going to talk about LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah.
BurningRiverBasketball.com.
Yes. Check us out if you like us, like hearing us talk. But anyway, just to give you our listeners a quick rundown of what's going on with the podcast. Danny and I haven't discussed any of this, but I don't know. This might not be exactly a weekly thing anymore, given that the season's over. If things happen, surely we'll be back and talking to you, especially like if Brian Kelly gets fired and there's a new hire. But I think both of us are on board of thinking that that's probably not going to happen.
Shouldn't happen.
I don't know. I wanted to talk about, we didn't really even get to it, I guess. Like, what if Brian Kelly goes somewhere else on his own, which I think is a far more likely scenario than him getting fired, to be honest with you. Especially, you know, I keep saying that Houston would be a great job for Brian Kelly to go take. But
No. Houston needs to hire Charlie Strong.
That's never going to happen.
Just pay him $1 a year, and Texas will pay his entire salary. You will get your head coach for free. The Texas Longhorns will be on the hook for $5 million a year over the next however many years.
That's what the buyout is if he takes another job?
And he's getting like 10 mil if he doesn't.
I didn't know what the buyout was if he took another job. I knew it was less, but I didn't know it was that much.
So he could coach at Houston and Texas could pay his salary. Genius move. If you're the Houston Cougars, you're making the trade. Although I would love to see Charlie Strong in South Bend as his defensive coordinator.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So if anything like that happens, Brian Kelly leaves for whatever reason, Charlie Strong's hired in South Bend, which I think would be awesome.
There should be a new defensive coordinator at some point we can come talk about.
Yeah. When
basketball gets into ACC play and plays
Notre Dame's on TV and things.
We can talk about it and stuff like that.
But, yeah, so to wrap up, I guess, it's not going to be a set in stone once a week thing. If there's stuff to talk about, we'll come talk about it. So we're not going completely away. Just know that
we'll check in around signing day for sure. And
yeah, we're going to be doing some things over at Golden Domer Daily. We've got some people over there that know a lot about recruiting and follow it. So I already told Nate, our recruiting guy, that he should come on the podcast, talk about some recruiting and things. So that's going to be something that we make happen.
Maybe we'll get a cool guest like Dan Fox again or something like that.
Right. So we're not going away. We'll be around. But until next time, this is us signing off.